woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
Found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
Tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. Half time out. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We also have Mr. Kevin O'Neill. SP Futures up 50 cents. Dow Futures down $5. NASDAQ Futures down 2. So, not much of a morning here so far. Operative word there being so far. We have all kinds of stuff going on this morning. Kevin, how are you?
I'm doing just great.
Did you already check out...
Beautiful your, morning.
Yes. Did you already check out your yield curve?
You know what? It's the first thing I do when I wake up in the morning. So I always figure at my age, waking up is a good sign. Moving is another good sign. And then if the yield curve doesn't hurt, the rest of the day is gravy.
Are you a Walter Brennan aficionado?
The kids are calling it that today, right? It's how's your yield curve?
Yeah, you're Walter Brennan aficionado.
That
they
could
said,
mean a lot of things.
What do you do in the morning? And he said, I pick up the paper, I check the old bits. If I don't see my name, I go to work.
It's about right.
Yeah. I thought one of the eeriest things ever was the Twilight Zone episode where the guy checked the old bits. Or he wanted tomorrow's newspaper today so he could kill the market. And there he was
in the newspaper.
There he was in the obits. So he spent the whole day trying to figure out how the hell he died and how it would not happen. Anyway, these...
How do you do?
Yeah, these yield curve numbers, I'm looking at this. If you just want to go to this thing, at treasury.gov, and it'll tell you every day what all the different... and you can go back, you know, essentially daily, as far back as you want to go.
Is this like the bad habit that you've used to replace checking the debt clock?
Well, the first four headlines I see last night and this morning are yield curve inverts even more. This is the official. Now, who the hell decides which is the official one? I have no idea. It's 2 year to 10. Now, because there's a lot of, it goes from 1 month to 30 years. So there's a lot of points on this chart. But 2 through 10 is the one they look at. So 2 right now is 1.53 and 10 is 1.49. But this is bizarre. At the beginning, on 8-1, which wasn't that long ago, since we're only 8-27, right? The 10-year was 2.44. Now it's 1.97. I'm sorry, 30-year. Kevin, it's unbelievable. That is unbelievable. So we're starting out at 1 month, 2.07, 2 month, 2.03, 3 month, 1.98, 6 month, 9.4. Here's where it starts to really fall off. The chart, 177 1 year, 153 2 years, 143 3 years. So explain to me why anybody would, because everybody's convinced we're going to start going lower down the rat hole into this, same thing that, you know, Germany's doing. And I listened to this guy on CNBC yesterday, who supposedly is an economist, banging the table for we just have to push this inflation rate up. If we don't get the inflation rate up, we're screwed. Kevin, I don't know what he's talking about. Why is inflation all of a sudden a goal to this level? What are these guys reading? What have they read? What have they seen in the monetary history of the United States that nobody but me has read most of? What are they seeing? Why is inflation a goal of any consequence other than people wanting asset prices up their own assets? Why is general inflation any kind of a goal? It's supposed to be zero inflation was the goal.
Well, it simultaneously, they are in serious violation of Goodhart's law.
Yep.
Because they're trying to move a target rather than, you know, I mean, yes, we need to measure these things, and there are good numbers and bad numbers that we prefer. But it's really, you know, when you start saying, well, we need to get this, you know, take care of this inflation issue, no, what you need to do is, if there are economic principles that apply, and we know what those are, we know what sound economic principles are, then the idea is that you do the right things, you do the things that are going to help that are economically sound for the long run, and those numbers will take care of themselves.
Well, that's right, but that's not...
And that's the underlying principle of Goodhart's law, and it's a very sensible one.
But that's not where we're going now.
It's definitely not where we're going now.
No.
And it hasn't been for a long time. You know, it's... we're always looking at the economic number next month, and that's driving way too many decisions. It's no different than the short-term thinking you get from people who manage their businesses from quarter to quarter and need that quarterly earnings number to meet a target. You can always make your earnings number meet a target. It's just that, you know, are you doing it in a sound and responsible way?
Well, but out of all the things, out of all the economic numbers there are, I'll use the term, mess up your inflation calculation and then use that as the target. I mean, when the world was, economic world was great, you didn't want to be sick, in the 60s or 70s, early 70s, very early 70s, you probably look at a growth number of 3, 3.5, and you see an inflation number of 1.5, 2, 1.75. So they sort of went hand in hand. But if you went back to that era and said, let me know the best thing about the miracle of the late 50s, 60s, with all the stuff that was happening, a lot of babies being born, internal growth in the population, and all that brought with it, all kinds of innovation in terms of dishwashers, washing machines, you name it, televisions, all kinds of stuff, air conditioners in houses, people never used to have air conditioning. So the incredible innovation and well, I'll use the term people have to have that never even knew existed. Out of all that stuff, out of all the 20 things you could name that were all part of that, shall we say, economic nirvana, for lack of a better term, why would inflation be the number you'd pull out? It would be the last number I'd pull out. I mean, it was
my last concern. Well, I won't say it would be my last concern. What I would say is, you know, if again, what do you do if you're going to target inflation? You know, how does that work? And the answer of how it works, of course, is that you're doing things like steady money supply and matching that or setting a consistent goal on that. And that would do much more for, to control inflation, which it isn't necessarily doing, than any targeting activity that says, well, I can do this to keep inflation down. We know the ultimate, that was Nixon's wage and price controls. Well, that was good for inflation too, wasn't it, for about a year or however long it ran?
That could be...
And then it was very bad for inflation.
For those of you that look at the market reaction to things as being the Holy Grail, like maybe our president, I'm going to say, well, I can't include all of them, but in our lifetime, probably one of the dumbest missives from the president were Nixon's wage and price controls. Yet I think to this day, if you look at the percentage move up in the market in the 3 days after they were declared, it's still either the biggest 3-day move or like second or third. I mean, it's right up there. So the market absolutely celebrated something that was a horrendous. I'm gonna clean this one up as best I can, Kevin. my boss at Allied Van Lines, Bob Seeler, nice guy. Boy, talk about a tough Polish dude, Kevin. I'd play handball against that guy. I mean, I would work him out like there was no tomorrow. He'd be sweating like a stone, but he, I mean, I was, if I could get 5 points, if I got six or seven, I had a great game. He could kill with either hand. He was just a beast out there. And, he was one of the guys that was going to the early, graduate program, the, what do they call the weekender program, the executive program?
Yeah, executive program.
The University of Chicago. So, of course, on Friday night, these guys would just go and have class, and they immediately head to the bar with the teacher. So, the teacher is Walter Fackler, who's dean of the school, right? So they're all smoking cigars in the cab, heading over to Martini's, which is their famous spot, to guess what? Get some martinis. And so one of the guys in the back seat, Bob, goes, so what do you think about the president's wage price controls? And I'm going to clean this up as best I can. Fackler takes this huge drag in his cigar, pulls it out of his mouth, and says, boys, let me tell you, wage price controls did to the economy what pantyhose did to fill in the blank. Yeah. He's like, I can't believe he just said that. And he said it was absolutely the worst decision ever. Not to mention it had so many exceptions to it that even if it would have worked, it couldn't have. Because everybody, there was exceptions all over the place. But I just, I guess out of all the things that were going on in the 60s, you know, people were probably getting 3.25% raise, maybe, and everybody was kind of moving together. I mean, there was promotions, there was new business, it was easy to borrow money, all those kinds of good things. Anybody get a mortgage? The inflation was nice because home prices were going up, I'm going to say 2% a year. So somebody bought a house and, like my parents did in 58 for 18.5, like by 1970 was worth 28. It was, you had a little bit of asset price inflation, so people picked up some wealth in that area. But most of the time in the 50s and 60s, wealth was created by making $100 a week and living reasonably comfortably on 80 and putting 20 in the bank. A totally, totally different world than now, Kevin. I mean, we have a new assistant producer training with Matt this morning, and she was saying that she was reading this book about how do you get wealth. She's trying to learn something about what we do, and anyway, so I thought I'd give her a shot at the assistant producer. And so Jay-Z is still here, though. She's still our number one girl. She was saying that the guy's talking about gold.
She's still my number one producer.
Yeah, gold. She want, and the guy's talking about gold, talking about houses,
no,
talking about
sooner or later, Matt's getting Wally pipped here.
No, not really. Matt's still, Matt's still the best.
All right.
But the thing of it is, as he's becoming the best at his other job, he's also traveling more. So we need a little more backup, is where that all is.
But he's busy Wally Pippen someone else.
He's kicking somebody else out of a thing. He's the designated.
That or the company's growing like a weed, which is probably the truth.
I'm not so sure they've grown so much since they were bought. I think they kind of lost the. A lot of times places don't do so hot if there's somebody else, new management's in. I think they were doing better when the old guys were there, but that's sort of a Matt story. But anyway, this yield curve is an issue, Kevin, but I don't know if I've ever seen such a smiley face. I mean, to me, the real inverted curve is 1 month is higher than 30-year. Why somebody gets to say it's 2-year versus 10, I have no idea. But if you look at the whole thing, it's a very odd-looking curve because what it says to me is in the economist stuff I grew up in, meaning Notre Dame, University of Chicago, what it tells you is there's very little demand for money, which is not a good sign. Because people should be willing, if you and I can think up, a project, a product, whatever it is, we should be able to make, if we got a good idea, we should be able to return 10-15% a year, and we should be willing to pay 6 or 7 to borrow, so we can make 12 or 15, right?
And what's the cost of money in the non-bank market?
I'm thinking, I'm not sure, Kevin. I'm going to say it's probably at least 5, maybe 7.
Because I'll bet you nobody's yield curve factors that.
No, well, that's. I mean, how many times?
So there may be. What I'm saying is there may be more demand for money than we're measuring. It's just been legislated out of the banking system.
Well, there's massive demand, and obviously in the automobile industry. I mean, the whole thing is look at the amount of car loans. There's massive demand in the student loan industry, And there's incredible demand in credit cards at 25% a throw. So the total.
Yeah, but that all fits on the short term and part of the curve, too. So if we are measuring it, well, it's measured in the short term. I don't think anybody's putting that as 10-year money, even though it may work out to be that way.
What percentage of people with credit card balances today are going to have it paid off in 10 years?
Right, but if you were going to classify it, what would you call it?
It's probably short to medium, but certainly not long term. Student loans.
So you know, if we are measuring all that stuff, then it's skewing the yield curve in a bad way, in a way that doesn't reflect the cost of money to major businesses. And if we're not measuring it, then we're really, really inverted.
Well, the people from the group PTI clients, they didn't leave PTI, they're still our clients. They put together a business that was essentially loaning money to people, small businesses, because the banks, they were charging a percent or a percent and a half higher. If the banks wanted 6%, Kevin, maybe, I'm not swearing the numbers, Dan knows this better than me because he talks to these guys more. And they were charging 7.5%, which people were willing to pay just so they didn't have to put a personal guarantee on it. We're talking about people with a real business. I mean, a plumbing business.
Right.
Business.
So you're talking about they'll pay more because they get better loan terms.
Right. Here's a
covenants, I believe, is the parlance of the industry.
By the way, if you foolishly go to the usdebtclap.org, what you will find,
that's redundant.
It's an entire redo of the page, Kevin, with more stuff on here than you ever believe. Okay. But the good news is we're up to $12,000 savings per family. I think, though, that's an average. I mean, a mean. We are up to $6,600 average credit card debt per holder. Well, that's a lot of 25%. $37,000 loan debt per student. Average mortgage, $203,000. I don't think they break out, I don't see here, although it's a whole bunch of stuff on this page. I'm not sure where car loans are. They got student loan, they got a credit card, but there's still total personal debt. There must be another spot in here for car loans. Because I don't think car loans are in with credit cards, are they? I don't believe so.
No, probably not. Car loans are probably, you know, almost all of them would be 5 years or less, so that would be intermediate debt.
Personal debt per citizen, $60,000. So the debt to income per citizen is 1.7. So it's 1.7 years of income is the average personal debt per citizen. I'm going to say that's really bad, Kevin. It's really bad. I'm just saying. You know, I don't know what the number ought to be, but it's not so hot.
Yeah, that would be an interesting number to see plotted over time.
Yeah. The official federal budget deficit is $1 trillion now. And this is after all this greatest economy ever, right? It's so our debt to federal debt to GDP ratio in 1960 was 52%. We still had a lot of stuff after the war. 1980 got down to 34, 2000 was 55, and now it's 105. So since 2000, we've doubled. We're up to the national debt is $22 trillion, and I think our national GDP's got to be $22 trillion. We're almost right on the number. Let me see where I've got the national. But I mean, you look at this, and
the way I feel about these numbers is there's long conversations to be had about blame. When did who was more to blame? Who ran up the most? Don't care anymore. What I do care is who's going to put us on a path to fixing that. And there isn't a single candidate that I have heard who started talking about that and said, here's how we can do this over the long term. Now, maybe it's one of the people who aren't going to qualify for the debates, and I've paid no attention. And I probably should, because I would love to latch on to a candidate like that.
It's a struggle. I mean, it's an amazing struggle, Kevin. I think somewhere along the line you have to get you have to shift the balance of income in the average corporation. The average large corporation, somehow you have to get a little more money down the line to people, because I think you've beat up on the lower middle class enough by shipping jobs overseas. Now you're working on the high PhD group by letting people in from overseas. But somehow or another, I think you need to, for instance, I think if you forced, forced is a bad term, because I don't think we want to do that. I don't want to sound like the president. I think a dividend paid is better for society than buying your stock back. Because I think the people who, the mom and pies that own the Johnson & Johnson or whatever, they deserve a check more rather than somebody. I mean, I think we need to figure out a way to where, and we have to find out why people that provide $20 to $30 to $40 worth of useful, I'll think back to my economic days, marginal revenue to a company, somehow are locked in at $10 that they make. I mean, I don't think Walmart cares if you and I became the tire guys, and we doubled the tire sales in the firm we're in. They're not set up to give us a raise to say, well, gee, these two guys are pretty damn good. We got to keep them. They don't seem to care, Kevin, which is weird. I mean, I think they care, but they're not set up to do things individually. They're not set up to give a bonus based on what they might do a little bit, but they're just somehow or another they're not set up for that, and I don't know why.
Well, they're overly structured in their pay systems, and you see that a lot in business. But then there are other businesses that do fully realize the value of low turnover, of keeping people and keeping their good people. So I think there's more of that than you're representing here.
Let's talk about that more after break.
There's a recognition of how expensive turnover is.
Well, let's talk about that after the break. SP futures down a buck and a half. Dow futures down 28. NASDAQ futures down 575. So not much going on this morning, except we got to talk a little bit about. We come back this oxycodone stuff. It's all over the place. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holly. He's Mr. Kevin O'Neill, Mr. Matt Weber on the board teaching our new lady who's, we're going to have to, I'm thinking we might have to go with a, Angelica Vlasenko. We might have to dub her AV or something, Maddie. What do you think?
AV? Audio, video? Audio, visual?
I can't do Angelica Vlasenko. It's like I can't do Jessica Zalewski every time either. I gotta go with the Jay-Z there as well. Anyway, SP Futures, we're leaking a little, down 5. NASDAQ Futures down 18. Dow Futures down 26. Just like yesterday. We were up in the morning.
She says that a lot of people call her Leica. Is that easier?
We can do that.
That's not bad.
Yeah. DAX down 117. That's the last part of the name, so that makes sense. DAX down 117, that's a full 1%. FTSE unchanged. Kekaron down 46.9%. Also, one of you guys, you or Kevin, is going to have to tell me the significance of the new Trump-like dude who's over in Britain has already asked the Queen to suspend Parliament. What the hell is that all about? I mean, is that the official dictator move there or what? I mean, I don't know. So I'm hoping somebody can write in what does that even mean. Nikkei up 23, call that flat. Shanghai down 8.2%. Hang Seng down 48.2%. So not much going on over in Asia. Bonds, 10-year 1.46. Never thought I'd see that. Bund now minus 0.72. People are convinced we need to go right down that rat hole. I don't know why. Japan down 1.26. We've got oil, negative 0.26 interest. Oil up 73 cents, 55.66. Brent up 62, 60.13. Spread is $4 and roughly 50 cents. Natural gas 2.23, up 3 cents, so it's creeping up just a little. RBOB gas 1.66. Gold has been the story. I mean, the story everywhere. 15.53. Silver 18.32. I stayed long this stuff forever. It finally is making me feel proud, but now all of a sudden I'm chasing a little bit, so it's, I don't know if I want to stay long or not here. It's a big decision. Matt, what do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
Coming up on 37 minutes past the hour, good morning to everyone out there. The Sports Weather Traffic Update is brought to you by Luckbox Magazine, the guide to money and probability, is available on newsstands for $7.99 per issue. Stocks and Jocks listeners receive a free digital subscription at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Off to a decent start on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways, but get this, Chief. There is a rollover semi that's carrying 41,000 pounds of apples. that rolled over on the Tri-State southbound right as you're getting onto the Eisenhower I-290 expressway.
Okay, should we go get them for Dan's apple squeezing?
It's a great question. I don't know if these are Granny Smith or what kind of apples these are, but 41.
Tart. You don't want the delicious, really. You want the tart ones.
Yeah, exactly. 41,000 pounds of apples. That's a lot of apples. How about them apples?
I like them apples.
That happens to be the load limit of a semi.
There you go. Well, traffic is getting by on the left shoulder at the exit ramp onto the Eisenhower from the Tri-State southbound, but that's causing a significant slowdown, as you can imagine, and I don't think that's going to be cleaned up anytime soon. Everything else looking okay out there. We're looking good coming in on the Edens and Kennedy. Southside expressways are behaving themselves. We do have a couple of issues off the expressways. Harlem southbound at Pratt Avenue on the northwest side, there's an accident blocking the right lane. Out in Joliet, Brick Street at I-80, southwestern suburbs, there's a crash. And there's a structure fire at 155th and Dixie Highway is causing a disturbance. But everything else looking okay out there. Weather today, another beautiful day in Chicagoland. Sunshine, a high of 78, low humidity. Right now it's crystal clear and 63 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, it's still hot down there. Sunny with a high of 110. Right now it's clear and 92. In sports, big road win for the Cubs last night. They took care of the Mets 5-2. Yu Darvish was outstanding. 8 innings of 1-run ball. A couple of big 2-run homers by Javier Baez and Addison Russell gave the Cubs the offense they needed. Unfortunately, the Cardinals won as well, so the Cubs remain 3 games back, but they did add another game in the wild card. They're now 2 up on Philadelphia, 3 up on the Mets, and they gained a game on the wild card number 1 slot as the Nationals lost, so they're 3 games behind the Nats for the number 1 wild card slot. A lot of time to go, but all these games are starting to really matter. White Sox lost to the Twins 3-1. Diamondbacks beat the Giants 3-2. Chief,
did you find out where our fire truck guys were going?
No, I don't see anything on my screen about that.
So 4 huge trucks and a helicopter and nothing. Wow, that's wild.
Yeah. So I don't know if it was more minor than they thought or what, but nothing affecting traffic.
Kevin, I think that somehow you have, you were mentioning before the break, I mean, how does somebody get this stuff back in line? I think you need to get your citizenry out of this much debt. And I would like to see, 3 things happen, and I don't think this hurts anybody, especially with interest rates down this low, is that the economic issues that we have is we've driven rates down, but it hasn't helped your population at all. You find people, and I hate to use disparaging terms, but I have to really say, people that are some of the 1% or economists are stone cold ignorant about these, other than home mortgages, and even those have kind of stopped going down. This drive down in interest rates has not really helped the general population at all. If anything, credit card rates are up. I'm thinking that from the people that I talk to, if you're not a great credit risk, I'm thinking some of these automobiles are like 11.5. I mean, you know.
No. They're higher than that.
Higher than that, maybe. Okay. I mean, so the idea that everybody's borrowing at 3% is just not there. I mean, I really do, as much as everybody thinks I'm kidding, I'm not kidding. I would like to see credit card rates 15% max. I'd like to see student loan, not pay them off, not tax shareholders or anything like that. There's no reason for that rate to be an average of about 6.5% now, Kevin. I mean, it could be 5. And I'm not saying it should be 0. I'm not one of those guys that say, but it could be 5. I mean, why are we scalping our? And I really think you've got to get rid of this only 3%, $3,000 potential loss on a capital gain or a capital loss on stocks or businesses, because you want people to get into business. You want people to feel like they can risk money, and if they lose it, they're not stuck for the rest of their life trying to. They're never going to try again if you lose $200,000 on your first place, and you can only take $3,000 off a year. I mean, there's little ways that we can, little ways to tweak this that would make a big difference to a lot of people, and we don't look at them at all.
I will tell you this: the one place where I don't mind the government intervening in the markets is if you're a government subsidized lender or a government supported lender in any way, then should you not have to operate in the public interest, because that's what government's supposed to do? So you want to put your hand, have your hand out, and let's mix metaphors and say you want to feed at the trough, then you're subject to some rules, and you don't get to squeal like a pig every time, every time they come in and do something. Now, I realize, I think Dodd-Frank was very, very bad legislation, and that was the government rules. But you know what? You don't like it, then stop taking, FDI insurance. Stop being supported. Stop taking bailout money. Stop taking all of that. But if we had some real consumer-oriented types of legislation, what we tried to do with Dodd-Frank was keep the banks from taking advantage, basically slap down the banks because they took, theoretically took advantage of people. But what we really needed to do was say, what's going to help real people that have a load of debt? And we didn't do that.
Well, we have people, and I'll point a finger at her, because I actually think her heart's in the right place and she's not afraid to put herself out there. Somebody like Elizabeth Warren, she's just misinformed, Kevin. The problem with the banks now is they're not loaning to people. They're not doing what banks are supposed to be doing, other than credit cards.
Right. We legislated that away. We made it. We got exactly what the legislation told them to do. We just didn't know it.
All right. I'm gonna push back a hair on that a little bit. We've made it easy and profitable for them to not give loans. We've made it so that there's now, granted, you and I are in areas where there's other banks, but a lot of places in the country don't have other banks. They just have the big guys. You've made it so that if somebody puts $5,000 in there, you charge them $15 a month. You take that money and you give it to the Fed, and they're paying you 2%. You don't need a regular loan, Kevin, and at that size, which is crazy. I mean, when you're paying a depositor 2-2.5%, guess what? You better go out and find some loans, or you can't pay the depositor. You go about a business, right? So we've turned the entire banking industry wrong. They feed at the government trough. But what you said earlier, this is what sets you apart from virtually all conservative people, and that's why, even though you are very conservative, it's okay. It's a good thing, because you understand. I mean, why I have people that will tell me at parties, especially when they get liquored up, we don't want any stinking socialists. And I'll say, well, what do you think you have now? What do you mean? Is this free enterprise? Is this competitiveness? Well, this is capitalism. What do you mean? No, start defining stuff for me. Tell me, and you can flummox people all over the place. That's why I know listeners and certainly Maddie Weber and everybody else gives me no end of crap about it. I talk a lot about railroads, and the reason why I do is because they're an incredible example of when government's part of something, and once you're in, you're all in. You don't give somebody, literally they did this, you don't give Kevin O'Neill 3 miles of each side of a line from Galena, Illinois to Chicago to build a railroad so you can sell the property and build a railroad. And now you've given Kevin O'Neill this monopoly, you build a place, and all of a sudden the farmer needs his corn to come to Chicago. It's before there are any roads. And he walks up to the train guy and he goes, I need my corn to go to Chicago. How much are you going to charge me? How much you got? Okay. I mean, once you get in, you're part of it. So now you have to say, wait a minute. We gave you the train line so commerce will increase. So guess what? You can't charge the guy all he's got. Here's what you can charge. Then you ended up in the pricing part of the business. You ended up in pricing on airlines. You ended up in this other stuff. But this half-ass sort of monopoly, sort of competitive, that's where we are in like all these industries, Kevin. I mean, you're talking about education. We don't have enough schools. Well, I guess some people would say we sort of do, but because of the accreditation process, now some schools are not thought of very well. Somehow, even though we have enough, we don't have enough. You know what I'm saying? We've got all kinds of weird ways of going about cutting the supply and basically messing with the competitive model. And that's what we have left. It's certainly not a competitive model. And there's people who basically, all you can see are their asses because their nose is down in the government trough. But the only problem is there's only three asses there. If there were 10, maybe somebody would compete, but they don't. So this whole banking industry has become non-competitive. That's the issue. They don't care about loans because they don't have so much money coming somewhere else. It's why people have been allowed to do that. Now, why not take LendingTree or someplace? I don't know squat about LendingTree other than people on the show tell me if you want to get a loan in Detroit, that's where you go to. You don't go to a bank. Why don't we explore the idea? Why can't LendingTree get deposits? If they're going to do such a better job, why don't they become a bank? Because they don't want to because of the regulation. They should be a bank. Why shouldn't they get people's deposits and pay people 2.5% and turn around and lend it to people for 6.5% like banks are supposed to do? How could you screw up the advantage of FDIC and everything that's so bad to where nobody even wants it by regulation? I mean, how do you even screw up that bad? Where am I wrong with this?
When it started out as a virtual monopoly.
Yeah. I have no idea how we basically have screwed up motherhood or something here. Let me get this straight. You don't want FDIC, you don't want little old ladies walk in and give you $100,000 for, you know, 1% or something? No, I don't want that. You guys are too much of a pain in the ass. I mean, it's how can we get there from here, Kevin?
So we go back to your original statement after the break. Yeah, I'm conservative. Yes, I absolutely would like less government intervention. And you know, that's just one of the principles for growth, as far as I'm concerned. But that's not really the point. Is if you're gonna feed at that trough, fine, but then you know, don't expect it to come without some rules, without some direction. Any more than borrowing money from the mafia is not gonna tell you, you know, they're not, yeah. You know, they're gonna come in and tell you how you're gonna run your business at some point. That's just the way it is, that we don't do that is testimony to the bank's lobbying power, I guess.
Well, you know, the last 2 weeks ago, I'm going to say, other than maybe the people involved, and there's probably a few other people, but I'm one of the few people I think that will talk about it on the air. You know what 2 weeks ago was, and I don't expect you to pull this one out of your hair, your neither Mandy. What 2 weeks ago was an incredible milestone in antitrust in my vision bleep ups. Guess what happened 2 weeks ago?
Go ahead and say it.
When United got together with Continental, and now of course most people would think, wait a minute, we only got 5 airlines. We don't really need to make. We got more than 5, I know, but real airlines. We don't really need to make it 4, or 2, or 3, or whatever all we got left. And so they get with the antitrust people who have got to be a bunch of 25-year-old buffoons. Who knows? And out of the entire country, out of all the places those two, United and America and Continental, competed, it's virtually the entire eastern part of the country, they decided that the only bottleneck was Newark. Out of all those places. And that if they forced them to give up 6 landing slots at Newark, that Southwest Air essentially gleefully accepted. Okay, now this was, how long ago was that merger? 15 years? 20? Long time. And
yeah, it's been at least 15.
Well, 2-3 weeks ago, Southwest Air finally said, we don't want to be in Newark anymore. Screw it. You can have your 6 slots back. So at the end of the day, they had to give up nothing. There was no
deal.
There was no, that one spot where they, not all the places in Colorado and places where you would land in Denver and there were 2 people that were going to flying to Steamboat or some other place or all those kind of places with the little regional jets that they, there was a Continental and United competed in that area. Not one of those airports was going down to one person going to hurt anybody, right? Bull bleep. The only place was Newark. It was 6 slots and now they're gone. And meanwhile, everybody we know that lives in Steamboat Springs drives to Denver because the flight from Steamboat to Denver is so ridiculously expensive because there's only one carrier.
How far is that drive?
3.5 hours. So it's not 200 miles. It's more like 150. But you're doing mountain driving,
right? Before,
you yeah, but by the time you what do I want to say, do a layover and get out of the airport anyway, you're probably not spending any more time driving anyway.
Yeah, but it's a real drive. I mean, you're not you might be listening to music, but it's a mountain snow drive. It's a, you know, it's a tough one all the way through Denver. Airport's on the other side of Denver by 30 miles. It's not something you would do if you could fly for $100, you'd do it.
Okay.
Real quick, Joe writes in, limiting credit card interest rates to 15%, as Chief suggests, will have the unintended consequences of preventing past credit challenge borrowers from having access to credit cards.
Okay. 15's not enough?
Well, it might also have the unintended consequence of people borrowing more. Because it'll affect their minimum payments and things like that too. It's one of these things that I think we'd have to think it through, and maybe test some scenarios. But all I'm really saying with it is, look, you don't get to take the government money and then operate in something that's not in the interest of consumers. You don't get to do that because the government is supposed to be representing the average person,
that's right.
not screwing them. Now, I realize the humor of that statement because they screw them all the time.
Right.
But that, you know, ultimately my point is that, you know, it's an industry that resists regulation and loves getting assistance, and you don't get to have both.
It also comes down to how well, and I'm not, by the way, thank the gentleman for tweeting in. It also comes down to how brainwashed we can get. Let's all think it through, not just the person who wrote in. How could it possibly be better for you to pay 25 than 15? I mean, there's no way.
No possible way it'd be better.
No possible way it'd be better.
I mean, I'm sorry. There's just no possible way.
I mean, my buddy at the Fed, I brought this up one night over adult beverages, and he goes, yeah, some of these people couldn't guess. He says, Jan, if you're not at credit risk at 15, what makes you? He goes, do you have any idea how many of those loans get written off? And I said, yeah, I do. I have a pretty good idea. And I said, but here's the problem. Because I have family members who got caught in this trap, and I'm sure we all know that. You go out and you buy some, say you bought a bunch of furniture, $5,000, and all of a sudden you have every intention of paying it off. Most of the reason why people's credit cards go up is because they have something that shows up that they didn't mean to. Somebody has an illness, somebody has something, prescriptions. So all of a sudden you start paying this 22%, say, and all of a sudden you miss a payment. Well, now that's $70 or something, or 50, and now it's 25 or 28. And I said to Jan, okay, of all the ones that are written off, if you could go back and look, was the original purchase somewhere along the line paid off? And he said, well, that's real interesting. There have been people, I could do the math, that have bought, I'll use the term, the furniture for $5,000, have paid, tried to pay, maybe missed a payment, over a period of 5 years, finally maybe declared bankruptcy, and there's $12,000 left on the card, but they've paid him $8,000. Right? So you would think over 3 years, $5,000 plus $3,000 should be enough. And yet it's not.
I think there's a lot of truth to that. Absolutely.
I mean, when I go back to this, this happened to me once, is I went to Sam's Club, and when we first signed up, we were the cat's meow card, whatever the hell that was, the high-end card, right? Which meant we got to go in the morning with all the people who were buying for their businesses, so we could go at 7 when the rest of the schlumps can go at 10. So, of course, which was great. You could go there, nobody around, you buy your crap, and off you go. Well, so then now they upgrade this. That card's the number 2 card, and finally they cancel it. So now the next card is something supreme in order to get the same advantages. Okay, so I buy it. Well, it comes with the credit card. And I go, all right. So I buy some stuff that day, and foolishly, I say, yeah, just leave it on that card. With every intention of when the bill comes, we're just going to pay it. PTI, it was water and stuff for the place. And, of course, it doesn't get here the first month. I slips my mind. Second month, the card shows up. You didn't pay last month. I think the late payment fee was like $45 or something. Plus, with the interest rate at like 27, whatever it was, it cost me like, I'm going to say $65 in 1 month for not paying a $220 bill. So I sent him, I didn't even complain, I sent him the 285 or whatever it was, snipped the thing in half, and that was the end of it. I mean,
we never used it again.
I mean, the numbers are mind-boggling. I mean, there has never been a knee knocker in the world, and the mob would never do that. What is that, $60, 65 hours on 220 hours in 1 month? For God's sake, it's 30-some percent. I mean, what are we doing 12. To people?
Times 12, Tom.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's if you...
Annualize it.
Yeah, I mean, well, the late payment was different, but still. How is that, you know, it's like like these people, look at what the real people get to do. Johnson & Johnson gets to pay $500 million damage. Okay, which they're gleefully planning to do. These other guys want to sell 2,000 lawsuits for $10 billion. Now, they're going to end up with not much of a company left. But the family's going to end up with $2 or $3 or $4 billion, okay, that owns the place. So what do you think these guys make per oxycodone pill where they can say, you want $5 billion here, just leave us alone? I mean, that is so different than what the penalty for a parking ticket, you don't pay a parking ticket for $8, the fine's 50. It's like six times. Do you think it's six times for these oxycodone people? I mean, we have an amazing issue with how the world works in this country for some people versus others.
Real quick, we only have 90 seconds, Chief. Yeah. Joe's response, the reason is that someone who is on the financial rebound will be far less likely to have access at 15% than at 25%. It's called rate versus risk. There is an enormous financial sector built on that. Is everyone in that sector wrong?
I'm gonna say that if we tried it, and if Joe's right, I'll buy him a beer, but I have a feeling at the end of the year, we'll find a way to get these people at 15%. 15's pretty friggin' high. I'm not talking about 8. You know, if Joe wants to argue with me, let's make it 16. Whatever. I'll do something. You know, but it
no,
doesn't.
But I think he makes good points in there. And ultimately, it, you know, goes back to what I said before. We need to sort of think it all through, but that, you know, that's part of the problem is we didn't think it through when we did the most recent round of regulation.
I'm going to say, as harsh as it can be, if I can borrow money from a government at 1%, okay, if I'm looking for people that I have to charge them 25 to break even, I got news for you. They shouldn't have a credit card. I'm sorry. And I know that's an AFMA, but I mean, it's like the judge. I sent him to the gas chamber. I feel I owed it to him. I mean, really? If somebody's that bad of a credit, what do you want to do to the guy?
Your Honor.
Yeah. You know, thank you. I mean,
but yeah, I hear you, Tom. I hear what you're saying. It's on the other hand, if you don't have a credit card, then you don't have access to a lot of things travel. And things
that's
like
right.
That.
I mean, so rental cars and things. I understand.
There needs to be something available.
I agree. SP Futures down 450. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you, Maddie. When we come back, we're going to have Mr. Russell Rhodes.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's JOHN@PTISecurities.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Something happening here.
Well, on base, Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tim Allen. It's Matt Weber on the board. Mr. Russell Rhodes as well. SP Futures now down 9. We're leaking just like yesterday. We just leaked the whole day. NASDAQ Futures down 32. Russell, our listeners have me all fired up now about credit card interest rates.
Which is a really exciting topic.
Don't charge stuff.
Well, you know what the usury rate is in Illinois?
What is the usury rate in Illinois? I do not.
Take a guess.
Oh, you always make a guess. I don't know. 27%. Something
Nine.
Ridiculous.
Nine.
Nine? Really?
The usury rate in Virginia, which is one of the highest, is 12.
Okay.
But because the Supreme Court said that people from outside the state, all the banks that used to be in Illinois are now in South Carolina or North Dakota, and they can charge whatever they damn well please.
I never understood. I always thought it was like for cheap credit card processing or something like that.
No, no, that's what they can charge the rate. There's no way.
It was so they could jack my rate.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But it's amazing to me. Now, what would the world economically, you're the professor, if you put a ridiculous limit on credit card rates, say 12%, what would the world look like? I mean, we have people that are defending like the industry. I would say that since you somehow need a credit card to do just about everything, I would say that you would end up having to start paying for the economically. I understand it would be a push. There would be people that would be in the business of charging you maybe $100 a year to have a $1,000 limit credit card just for when you need it.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what I was thinking. The fees would probably just go up. They're going to get you one way or another.
But at least that's better than hitting you up with something at 15%, and the second you have a problem, running it to 25%, because the fact that you have a problem is, you know, that's a problem. I mean, you know, Okay. If ever you get in
financial trouble, just making a problem worse.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, what I would actually, on the advice of our buddy Kevin, one of these days, I'm going to grab a, I might even actually go to Lakeside, my bank, and just say, give me a credit card, $1,000. That's all I want on it. Because then I can use it online, I can use it, and I never have to worry about somebody running up charges on it, because once it gets to a G, which I can handle, it'll blow up. I mean, the last thing you want is to be using one that you got a $15,000-$20,000 line on, you know, online or in a parking meter or something like that, because I learned this from our Matty Weber and the rest of the guys. You know, so I really would like one that's $1,000 that I use when I need to. And then, nobody can go over that. Just saying.
I understand. Yeah. If I didn't have to travel for my job, I probably wouldn't have the one that I have right now. The only reason I have the one that I have right now is it's got a high fee, but I get to hang out in the Admiral's Club. And, so I don't have to hang out with the masses at O'Hare or LaGuardia. I get extra points and all that other kind of stuff as well.
Let me guess. A black American Express.
A what?
A black American.
No, not that high. No.
Silver. Silver American Express.
No. I don't think so. No, it's a Citibank card.
Really? Yeah. I thought the American Express one's the only one to let you in all the airport clubs.
No, it's an American Airlines one.
Oh, okay. So you can just go on the American Airlines one. All right, fair enough.
Yeah. I have a Hilton one, and I can always be found at Hilton's or on American Airlines nationwide. They still don't give me any perks for being, you know, our buddy John gets all kind of extra perks from American because he's a celebrity.
Well, you know, if you ran the same, your bosom buddy Bratsky used to get the same deal going.
Yeah.
If you fly domestically, and if you ran the same, like, flight every week.
Yeah.
They'll wave you into first class. But the weird part is, and you know some of this, one of my buddies, he's been a contributor to the show a couple times, John Lee, who lives in Singapore and does a lot of this international, you know, marketing and internet, a lot of stuff for the communications industry, you know, putting towers up in China and things like that. He goes, there's never a break on overseas stuff. I mean, if you want to go from coach to business class, you're talking 50,000. No, you're talking 50,000 miles. That, you know, and there's no. They're not just waving you up there because you travel a lot.
Yeah, well, that's what I meant when I said you had to pay for it.
Yeah.
They want something from you for it. They'll have a bunch of empty seats up there. I've seen that before. What's really funny is if you use miles to upgrade from some countries, they actually have they tax it like you paid for it.
Really?
So like if I upgrade myself coming back from London, it costs me $100 or $200 in addition to the upgrade.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, because they're counting the miles as income.
So they put a monetary value on it.
That's interesting.
They put a monetary value on it, and they tax you on it.
They tax you like right then, or they send it off to the IRS.
Oh no, they tax you on it. You pay for it
in Britain or here.
You know, like I just used miles to book something for my sister, and you know, American charged me $11 plus the miles. It's the same sort of thing, but the charge is a couple $100, and it has to do with the. It's either the government or it's Heathrow. I don't know which it is,
it's not the British IRS.
No, but it's like it's just extra sales tax.
Okay, but I'm saying what I thought like you were getting tax. At.
Yeah.
So in other words, if you save up $200,000,
I got it. No, it's not that. I'm not having to pay taxes to the people. I don't have to write them a check at the end of the year. God.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Taxes are hard enough without something like that coming up.
Well, it wouldn't surprise me that if you go out and have 90 bazillion miles, and like some of our guys from the Fed have, and you take your whole family to Europe and it's $2,000, I wouldn't be a bit surprised if somebody in the IRS goes, gee, that sounds like income to me to the professor. You know, I mean, I'm sure they think it's income, right?
And they tax any... they being the overarching they, who one of them is probably listening to us right now, and we should watch what we say. They'll tax you however they have a chance to.
It is.
Especially living in Illinois.
Yeah, we were talking last night about, you know, why do they get the idea that whatever the overriding mentality is, they can do better with your money than you can.
Which is just, that's just ridiculous in its own right.
Well, I mean, let's do something simple. And I know we have, you know, people pushing back on me today. Which, by the way, I love it. So please do. It means it shows people are interested. What if I was like a real nut job, you know, which I can be. Let's say the state of Oklahoma gets $500 and some million from Johnson & Johnson, and the guys at Johnson actually write a check instead of tie it up for another 10 years and being total bleeps about it. Say they wrote that check. What if I were governor and said something like really stupid and said, we're going to divide this up by the, let's say there's, you know, a million people that have oxycodone problems in Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
Every person who wants to go to a rehab center, and it costs $500, we will write the check for you to go. Or something along those lines. So we actually bring it down to the people who have the problem. Rather than have, you know, all of a sudden some massive oxycodone bureau in Oklahoma where 4 cents on a dollar makes it down to the actual user. Because you got this program, that program, you got to be in this building, you just hired 10,000 people with new desks and new everything else, and Joe the desk guy makes a fortune, and Bill the typewriter guy, if anybody has a typewriter anymore, computer guy, he makes a fortune. By the time you trickle down to the guy who's got the problem, there's nothing. Which is what we do all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Or we could just do something else.
It rarely gets where it's supposed to get. They'll say that it's getting to, you know, that like they did with the housing, with the fines on the housing, but I don't think it ever got where you would hope that it would get.
Do you know of any one person who ever got helped on one of those mortgage help out things? I don't.
No, I don't. I don't really know. I don't know what ended up happening that money. I don't want to speculate because I'll get myself in a lot of trouble, but my feeling was it went to a lot of community type groups that were supposed to help people, but I don't know if it got past the community groups.
And I'm going to say virtually everybody I know is paying some sort of mortgage insurance. I don't think anybody ever got paid for that either.
Probably not. So I don't know what happened to that money. It just went poof.
But there's a lot of money.
Because you brought up the issue of the government thinks that they can do better with our money than we can. There's one guy running for president that thinks opposite. Andrew Yang.
Yeah.
His whole thing is give everybody $1,000 because you can do better. Because you know you can probably do better with the money than we can. I love that. I want my $1,000.
Well, the only one time in the world that I want to be in CNBC with all the talking heads, there's only like one time, because once in a while they'll launch into this thing about the Fed's mistake in 1937. Okay, which is on everybody's radar because everybody's heard about it, correct? The Fed's mistake in 1937. But there isn't one of them that could define what the mistake was.
They've just heard it over and over again.
They heard it over and over again. It's sort of like, without revealing the company, I was in this arbitration where I was an expert witness, right? So somebody brings in, just happened to be a lady, could have been a guy, doesn't really matter, who's the head risk manager for some really big firm that I could name, but I won't. And there was all this problem, the guy lost all his money and blah, blah, blah. And she says, well, the market had very high volatility. And the guy says, well, what does that mean? She goes, it was very volatile. So now the lawyer picks up on this.
That answered that.
Yeah, and he goes, okay, how much is a lot? How much is normal? How much was going on? Well, it was much more volatile than normal. No, tell me what normal is. and tell me what those few days were. Well, it was a lot more. And he says, by the way, can you define volatility for me? And she goes, you know, volatility. He goes, no, the word I asked you to define is not the definition of the word, right? She couldn't do it. She couldn't tell him. Normally, we move less than 1% in a day. And by the way, this day we move 4 or 3 or 2, and that caused a big problem in this particular area, and that's why this moved the way it did. I had no idea of the background of it. And yet,
yeah.
I mean, so when people talk about 1937, and you can't go a week or two when people talk about the Fed where somebody doesn't bring that date up. And I'm going to ask you, Russell, because I have a feeling you know what the Fed did in 37 and why it was such a change from 36.
Well, they raised rates a little bit, and everybody says they raised rates early because we double-dipped, or I don't know if you'd call it a double-dip, but the economy slowed back down, and we had a really nasty recession.
Yes, except the outlier was 1936. What the Fed got caught on was...
Yep.
Because what happened in 1936? Not that we were alive then.
I believe we had rapid inflation. I think the market did extremely well also.
And Chief had his first communion.
It could be. Yeah, was there?
Yeah, all three of those.
I said, you had to wear the red tie. Did you guys ever wear the red tie? Your first communion. We had the white shirt and a red tie. It was bad. In 1936, remember remember reading about the tent city in front of the White House in Hoover days? Herbert Hoover days. That had to do with people in World War One. In those days, you didn't get paid while you were in the Army. You got your money when you got out. Essentially, if you survived, you got paid. It was kind of an odd way to go about it, which we wouldn't really do today.
You got a bonus for making it.
Yeah, basically. Well, none of these people got paid. So the purpose of that whole tent city thing, the MacArthur went in and burned down and threw all those people out and sent them home, was because they wanted their money from the World War One, and the government wouldn't give it to them. So
they wanted it sooner than it was supposed to be paid.
I think
that it was contractually supposed to be paid or something along those lines.
Because they needed it.
They needed it. We were in the middle of the Depression.
But they were also 5 years after the war. I mean, how much? Yeah. And so then all of a sudden this thing passes through Congress during a Depression. Roosevelt, most uncharacteristic thing I've ever seen the guy do, I've ever read about him doing, he vetoes it, and they override the veto. So in 1936, they actually shipped out like 12, 13, 1400-hour checks to people most of them are totally destitute. So I'm going to say the velocity of money, Professor, could never have been higher. But that check hit the door, and it was spent that day.
If the postman showed up at 9 a.m., it was spent by 5.
Exactly
by
right.
Noon.
And the same thing that year was that the federal government decided that people shouldn't own gold. All right? So they went around and were buying gold for people, cash for gold. So if you happen to have something or you had, you know, two family members that had gold teeth that croaked and you yanked them out of their head, whatever, you're selling. So you had those two big injections of cash in 1936. And that's what made the economy look like it was getting better. So the Fed foolishly decided, instead of realizing this was totally a one-off deal or a two-off deal, decided we were coming out of this too fast. So they did make somewhat of a mistake, but the reason why is they bid on a mirage, basically. And right now, what I'm leading into, I was listening to people yesterday. One guy is pounding the table that the Fed has to get this inflation number up. Why, Russell, out of all the numbers we could be focusing on, are we focusing on that one?
I don't know, because I don't know. Because kind of like when you say, because that's how we've always done it, something along those lines.
What did the guy say?
You know, that we've always had a slight bit of inflation, and because we don't have it, things are eventually going to go wrong. You know what I mean? I don't think it's kind of like having the person define volatility and they couldn't take you to the next step on it. I don't think there's a really good next step when you're pushing or having the Fed say that we're, or having everyone say that we've got to get inflation up. Well, you haven't had inflation in Japan for 20 or 30 years, I believe, and they're okay. I'm not saying things are great over there, but they're okay.
Well, you mentioned what you just mentioned. Yeah. You were an NCIS fan. And what's his name? The guy who's now playing in Bull was on there, and he was going out with this lady. And the guy's like a total narcissist, but he's going out with this lady, and the director, who was a female at the time, says, well, have you slept with her? And he says, no. And she goes, well, that's so unlike you. And he goes, you usually are after that, like, right away. And he goes, well, the way I look at it, if I do the things I've always done, I'm going to get the results I've always gotten, and they weren't very good. I'm trying to change it up a little.
There you go.
Which is the same thing you just said about the Fed. If we do the same things we've always done, we're going to get the results we always got. And are they that good?
Yeah, we go through these cycles over and over again. And, you know, I teach the cycle, even though it hasn't really happened for the last 10 years or so. And, you know, maybe it's not so bad that we kind of just chug along as opposed to, you know, having it, you know, the economy overheats and the Fed has to do things to slow it down. And then it slows down so much it hurts people who get stuck with really nasty credit card debt. And then they do things to speed things back up. And there's a certain group of people that only work every 3 to 5 years and, you know, it end up having a miserable life because of that.
Well,
maybe
the conclusion
what they're doing now isn't all that bad.
Well, the conclusion at the University of Chicago was, and again, there's never been a period when, I guess there might have been a few year period, but where this has ever happened, where they said, look, instead of fighting the ups and the downs, just maintain a steady money supply growth, and let's try that for like a decade. We think it'll work better. You know what I've got in the last 13 weeks, where I have the expansion of M2 at?
Where is it right now?
Take a guess. 13 weeks.
And the last, or recently?
Well, at an annual rate.
Oh, on an annual rate. Oh, God. I hate when you do this to me. It's so early. I don't know, 4 or 5%.
9.1.
Good Lord.
Yeah. And we've got a president.
That to keep us going. So what's going to be the day of reckoning on that?
Why do you think the long-term rate, I've got them right here, the 30-year rate is down, where am I at here, daily Treasury yield curves. Since August 1st, it's down 0.5%, 2.44 to 1.97. The only way that can happen, the only way is for Fed porn. So when I knew the number was going to be big, I would have guessed 7.5. I saw the 9.1, and we've got a president bitching at the guy for not doing enough.
We got to do more.
What more can we do? This is insanity.
You keep doing more, you're going to run out of photon torpedoes or whatever.
Wow, those are good.
But that's the other guy that's going to have to worry about that.
Yeah. Hey, as an international dude, more than us. What in God's name is going on with this guy wanting to get rid of Parliament now, at least for a while?
I've decided whenever you put anybody in even a small piece of part of power, it goes to their head very quickly.
Do you think if we had a king or a queen, Trump would have been there already saying you got to get rid of Congress? Just let me handle it.
I think he would have, but I don't think he would have been the first one.
No, probably not.
You know, I think I could come up with scenarios for just about every president in my lifetime and an excuse that they would have had to ask for that.
Well,
Obama when he started out because the economy was in such bad shape. W a couple of times after 9/11, and then, you know, because of the housing crisis, I could give you a couple of reasons that they might cite to try and do that. And if you think about it, if you've got things that you'd like to do, and you got to go through 535 people to get at least half of them to agree to things, or you can come up with a way to go around them. You probably are going to try to go around them as much as possible.
Well, if the stuff
that's why we have the government we have, so they can't do that.
Right. Well, they try to.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm sure you probably weren't foolish enough like I was to spend 4 years in high school because I was so horrible at other languages to taking Latin, which you didn't have to speak.
No, I did not take Latin.
Well, you learn a lot about the Roman government and what they would actually do, and I think there were, you know, way more than 10, I'm going to say 20, 25, in periods of crisis, they would actually go to somebody and make a dictator for, you know, 3, 4, 6 months until the crisis was over, the war was won, and the guy would say, okay, I'm done, I'm heading back to the farm, see you guys, and off he'd go. I mean,
that's the representative form of government that we're supposed to have.
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't know.
Where we all take turns. I took my turn. I got elected to something. I did it for 4 years, and I walked away and let somebody else do it. That's how it's supposed to be working. We're not supposed to have these lifelong politicians in place.
I don't know how to answer that. Reason why Russell is because they. When I was on the board of the SIBO, I did 2 terms. Now, uh-huh. I'm with you, you know, 20 terms is too many. but with the 2 terms, 2 3-year terms, I'm going to say I did.
You got the institutional knowledge that you started to bring along.
I'm going to say I accomplished at least twice as much in my second term, and probably, you know, 80% of that was in the last year and a half. And I was kind of just sort of catching fire. I think 4 would have been too many, but 3 might have been okay. You know, 9 years maybe. I mean, I don't. Plus the staff, the thing you run into is if you're a little bit of a maverick, like maybe I was, the staff just outweighed you. He's going to be here for 3 years.
Because they knew you weren't going to be there.
You weren't going to be there forever. They just put up with this guy.
Yeah, like all that's what all the foreign governments are doing to Trump now.
Well, yeah. I think I think the House of Representatives in today's world, if we were going to redo the Constitution, I'm going to say if you wanted to do, you know, a 4-term max, the term should be 3 years.
Yeah. I think 2 years is, 2 years is a little, it's short for this day and age.
Well, the agricultural bill.
When our government wasn't as involved in our day-to-day lives like they are now, I think 2 years was fine. But now it's just because they're trying to do such big things and they dictate so many aspects of our life. Trying to fix things or change things in just a couple of years isn't enough.
Well, like an agricultural bill is a 5-year project. So you can't have you know, 3 new people on the agricultural committee sitting in the chairman's spot and expect the bill to be any good, I don't think.
I wonder what the cost associated with the every 2-year election is.
You know what? I'll tell a story when I get back. SP Futures down, not that I don't like to tell a story. SP Futures now down 975, leaking again. NASDAQ Futures down 37. Be right back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. Hey, Luckbox Magazine, the guide to money probability, is available on newsstands for $7.99 per issue. Stocks and Jocks listeners receive a free digital subscription at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. I have my right, my one right here, but this sounds like a magazine that Russell would write for. So that he has a
absolutely
kind of, interesting stuff.
Very intelligent and can spread all fields.
Yeah, and he's and, you know, he's one of, he's a professor guy. I mean, you know, I'd like to be the professor at Gilligan's Island. The guy knew everything. It wasn't just one subject.
Yeah, and I would be just like the professor, because if Ginger were throwing herself at me, I'd be clueless.
You would say you're, you would say you're Marianne's guy.
No, I'd just be clueless. I'd be trying to figure out how to make salt water charge the batteries so we can listen to the radio.
I think guys have been clueless through the ages sometimes. You know, what can
where
I
say? We continue to be.
God. S&P futures, we're leaking, but we seem to have stopped leaking. We're down 8.25, and NASDAQ futures down 31. Dow futures down 69 over in Europe. DAX down. These guys are moving lower. I wonder if it has a lot to do with this British stuff, but maybe not, because, well, the DAX down 126, 1%. FTSE's only down 18.2%. CAC around down 53, 1%. So the one hanging in there is the FTSE, which is somewhat strange. Nikkei up 23, call that flat. Shanghai down 8.3%. Hang Seng down 40. So very quiet in Asia. Again, bond yield, 10-year bond under 1.5%, 1.45. This is not good. It cannot possibly be good, and I just hope it doesn't get real bad. Bund now is down point, is a negative 0.72. Japan 10-year yield is negative 0.26, which is the lowest I've seen that in a while. Oil up 72 cents, 55.65. Brent up 61, 60.12. Natural gas 2.22. Gold is now down, it's flat, 1552. Silver 1837. As much as I've been bullish on both of these things for quite a while, I don't know how much further they can go here. I will maybe get Russell's opinion after traffic, weather, sports, Manny.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We have an issue now on the Stevenson, that's on the outbound side just before Damon Avenue, a crash blocking the left lane. and that's causing some stop-and-go traffic as folks navigate around that. No issues on the inbound side. Southside expressways have been looking pretty good all morning on the Ryan, I-57, and the Bishop Ford. The Eisenhower is pretty jammed up. That earlier crash that had the spilled Apple truck at the Tri-State getting on the Eisenhower, that apparently is all cleared. So actually, that's not all clear. It did pop back up. So they're still working on that. That's blocking the exit ramp due to a rollover semi that happened earlier this morning carrying 41,000 pounds of apples, which traffic is now getting by on the left shoulder. So they're making some progress there, but that's affecting the Eisenhower due to that rollover crash. Kennedy is our other slow-moving expressway, normal traffic volumes, but they're high. But no accidents or issues to report. Off the expressways, northern suburbs, Route 12 at Bonner Road, there is a crash. But everything else looking good out there. Weather today, another beautiful day in the city. Sunshine, a high of 78 degrees, very low humidity. Right now it's clear and 64 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny with a high of 110. Right now it's clear and 93. In sports, Cubs with a big win in the Big Apple last night. They beat the Mets 5-2. They remain three games behind the Cardinals, who have won six in a row. They beat up on the Brewers again. But the Cubs gained a game on Philadelphia for that second wild card spot. So the Cubs are now two up on the Phillies and three up on the Mets. The Cubs are three games behind the Nationals for the number one wild card spot. So still firmly in the playoff picture. In fact, they have about a 75% chance of making the playoffs, but they obviously want to win the division because you don't want to be in that one game wild card. We've seen what it's like to win that game as they did it in Pittsburgh a couple years ago, but we also saw last year what it was like to lose that game. So you want to get out of that. White Sox are playing out their season. They lost to the Twins last night 3-1. Diamondbacks beat up on the Giants 3-2. Chief.
If you, right now, if you had a wild card game, who's your pitcher?
That's a great question. Part of me says Quintana, because he's been their best pitcher for the last 2 months. Part of me says Darvish, because he's been really good in, you know, five of his last six starts, and he's, you know, he looks dominant out there when he doesn't give up the home run. And last night, he just gave up the one solo home run, and that was it. But then part of me says you got to stick with your guy and go with Lester, even though he struggled a little bit. He's your big game pitcher that's been there before. I don't know. And you could, I mean, you could convince me to go with Hendricks too. I mean, I don't know. They basically have five starters that are all really good, but none of them are an ace.
You could do what Billy Martin did when he was manager of the A's. You could have each guy pitch 50 pitches and then pull them.
It wouldn't surprise me if they did something like that.
For a one-game playoff, because it's still important, and I don't know how much of a break they would get until they got going, but that might not be the worst idea in the world.
Sort of depends on the guy. I mean, some people, they're just getting warmed up at 50. Other people...
Well, Hendricks is really, really good the first two times through the order, and then when he struggles, if he struggles, it's usually that third time through the order. And that was their strategy in Game 7 of the World Series. They had him start, and then even though he only gave up one or two runs, whatever it was, they pulled him and brought in Lester. And Lester didn't actually pitch that well in that first inning, but then he settled down. And obviously they ended up winning the game, but that was their strategy. I wouldn't be surprised if they did something like that.
Well, it also depends on how bad you beat everybody up to get to the wild card spot.
Right, yeah. I mean, some guys are just going to flat be unavailable.
I mean, if you had to win the last three games, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and somehow you did, you got your tongue hanging out Monday night, could be me or Maddie pitching.
Right. Well, there would be one day off in between the end of the season.
All right. So if there's a playoff, it's Monday night.
Yeah. If there's a playoff to decide a regular season outcome, then, yeah, that would be on Monday. But the one-game wild card would be one day off in between.
What happens if, like, four teams tie for wild card?
All kinds of fun playoffs.
Yeah, there'd be a lot of playoffs.
So that would be Monday night, probably.
I would think so.
I think that have they not had three-way tie once where, or they had to do two games.
Well, they did Monday and Tuesday. Yeah, the Cubs had a playoff last year for the division on Monday, so they lost that. So
okay,
which put them in the wild card on Tuesday, and then they lost that, right, Matty?
Yeah, but there was only one tie. There was only one tie, and that was with the Brewers for the division.
Right, but I mean, that could have happened. They were very close to having like two or three people in there.
Yeah, no, it's every year it comes close, but for whatever reason, I don't think it's ever happened where you've had three that right. I can remember. But it's possible, obviously.
I think they actually would have. Let's just say that the Cubs were the second team into the wild card and they tied with somebody, I think they would have one game to figure that one out and then another game,
yep.
which is very exciting.
You could have 16 teams tie. Actually, 15 would be the most. You could have 15 teams tie. How about that?
Well, how would you do that?
All 15 teams have the same record.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah. Why doesn't everybody, in this day and age, everybody should make the playoffs?
Yeah, just have everyone tie.
And everybody should get a bonus. Everybody should get a ring.
Like hockey or football. Like,
you know, that we came in 15th in 2019. We get a ring.
Yeah, in hockey and in basketball, you have a better chance of making the playoffs than missing.
Yeah.
Well, the
16 out of 30.
It's interesting that you should bring that up, Russell, because we were talking about that earlier in the week with Mr. Kevin. When things get, I'll say, historically skewed a little bit, the percentages almost don't help you out. I mean, because Kevin and I were talking about it, and I also want to lead you into what this new monetary theory is. And first of all, what was wrong with the old monetary theory? And is there really a new monetary theory? Or is it just people doing what the old monetary tells you not to do? Which seems to me what's happening. But, I mean, when you have such a skew, I mean, next time you come in the office, by the way, we have a iced coffee here for you. Next time you're here, I'll show you some of these inflation studies that the listeners have sent me. A lot of them are not current, because I'm not sure people are still doing them. When I say they're the year, you know, 2000 to 2014 or something like that. Here we are, 2019. But still, they tell a story. You know, everything tells a story, as they say. And where they're talking about, you know, this particular price is up like 800% in 14 years. This one's up, you know, wages are up, you know, 30% or something, and yet, you know, the cost to have a baby is up 1,000%, or you know, that type of thing. Where you work through these numbers, and you look at over time, they get worse and worse. I mean, so to the point where, if you've got people, a lot of people in the population make $10, $11, $12 an hour, and you've got inflation numbers that say are wrong over a long period of time, I mean, you can have a 2% inflation number on, say, medical care, and have somebody get a 10% raise at $10 an hour, and they don't even, one sounds more than the other, but it's not even close. And I think we're starting to see some of that, where mathematically it's just bleeped up.
It's impossible to do certain things.
Yeah.
Like, compared to how you used to be able to do things in the past. And then some things are easier to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, because this kind of crossed my mind, and I was, you know, anxious to have you on because of what our governor did with the $40,000 minimum wage for teachers. Now, I'm not about to pile into how much teachers are worth and blah, 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 blah. Everybody knows a good teacher is worth, like, a lot. But like anything else, a lot of people are worth a lot. You know, somebody, a farmer is worth a lot. I mean, the question is how much, and that's what the economic system is supposedly going to take care of. But I mean, if you go back in when I was being a janitor at the schools, teachers were making, I'm going to say, 12, and people in a plant were making 20.
Yeah, you weren't. Being a teacher was not a primary income profession at the time.
Well, but I'm not saying it was right or wrong. What I'm saying
is, no, I'm not saying it's right or wrong either. I just, you weren't making enough to support a family off of. You do now. We've got a whole ton of six-figure teachers out where I live.
Well, what I'm saying is that now the person who's essentially paying the teacher's salary, okay, he's now making the median for an individual is what, 36, which is kind of high considering how many people are making 10, 11, 12, but say it's 36, which is the number you get. Well, now if the minimum teacher is 40, I'm going to guess the median teacher is going to be 50 or something. We've totally flipped in how many other people it's going to take to pay for one teacher, right? So, and the other people, what I'm getting at this is even if next year all the rest of the people get a 3% raise, and the teachers get a 2% raise, which isn't going to happen. They always seem to get more. They're actually getting more of a raise than the other guy, and there's no way to. I guess what I'm saying is it's not what people deserve or get, but at one point you had, let's say, 20 regular people, 30 regular people, out of their taxation could pay one, or even 100, could pay one teacher's salary. Now we're talking about 150 people, 160. That to me is not something that we look at very often. Well, certainly the teachers union doesn't. I mean,
no.
These are quote the issues. I mean, you can do whatever you want to somebody making 10, and you can say, I'm going to give Russell's kid, he's getting a 15% raise. It's a buck and a half. Give me a break. It's like,
yeah.
It's like Russell Widgets Inc. is up 40% this year. All right, the stock's now $1.40. It was $1. So what? I mean, if you got a billion shares, I guess it's okay. But you know what I'm saying? We throw these numbers around to essentially deceive people. I mean, I've read three, four articles in the last week, Russell, where people kept jumping from the median to the mean, and on the average and stuff. I mean, this went up, expenses are going up here, but don't worry about it because wealth is going up here. Well, they're using expenses, they're using the mean, and on wealth, they're using the mean. Expenses, the median, and the other one, the mean. Mm-hmm. Well, you can't count on the guy whose stock went up so much, average him into the guy making 30 grand and say it's all okay. I guess what I'm saying is, if we don't stop fooling ourselves, we can't fix anything. Because we're just pulling the red filter over our eyes or something.
No, they're it's real easy to manipulate numbers and fool the folks. Most of the people, not people like you at the University of Chicago Education.
You know what? They can fool me.
It's really easy to fool a lot of the folks. And that's one of the things that makes, like, the presidential debates really funny. Because both people can talk about the same statistics, or the same base set of numbers, and one can make them sound good and one can make them sound bad.
I'm going to say, Russell, as much as you think I'm this hardcore goofball, old grumpy conservative guy, or shall we say conspiratorial guy, I'm going to say when a politician lob something out there that I never heard before, even Trump, my first instinct isn't that the guy's telling me a flat-out lie. I may research it.
It's not true. It's absolutely not true.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't. It's still not in the blood that somebody who essentially works for us, even though I see it happen by the day, that the first thing that comes out of their mouth, and if I was a supporter, it surely wouldn't, right? Because I'm clearly not a supporter of any of these people. I'd like to find somebody I could support, but I don't.
You don't like Andrew Yang? I'm getting excited about math.
I actually don't mind him so much. Plus, I like the fact he doesn't wear. I like the fact he doesn't wear a tie.
Oh, he doesn't? I like
it. Isn't he the guy who doesn't wear a tie?
I think you might be right. I think he was jacket, no tie.
Yeah.
I didn't watch any of the debates. I've just listened to them individually every once in a while, and I just like that instead of saying "Make America Great Again," if you support him, you wear a hat that says math.
It says what?
Math.
Ah. It's just math.
Or it just has the pie symbol.
That's it, man. Math. I love it.
I'm going to say the only problem with math right now is, who's his name? Jack Nicholson? You can't handle the truth.
Yeah.
the real math, you don't want to know this. Maybe that's why his hats are black.
All right, so if nobody's spending any more, Russell.
It's math. Be afraid.
You can't handle the truth.
Good job, Eddie.
Exactly.
Matty.
There it is.
So where is the 9.1% increase in money supply going, Russell? They want it to go into the market, but it's not. What if it doesn't? What if it falls flat on the market? We're buying something from somebody. Well, the Fed, didn't we go through the numbers yesterday, Matty, right? The Fed is the single biggest holder of Treasury securities now?
I missed that. What'd you say?
I would believe that right off the bat.
You said the Fed is the single biggest holder of Treasury securities now.
That's correct, yes.
That's insanity, Russell.
I know, because it's the same people.
The Romans wouldn't give Caesar the right to just print up money and spend it. And yet we're essentially doing that, only we're giving the population the two-step process.
You think the Romans were smarter than us, and if Caesar had said, "I'm going to make paper money," they would have gone, "No, you're not."
They maybe, I don't know. They maybe, but you know what they did? You know what? The interesting thing is, the original coin, maybe Google, what was the original? There's a, I should know the name of the damn thing. Was it a drachma? I'm not sure. The original Roman coin had enough silver in it where the idea that that hunk of silver, you know, I'm going to say 300 BC, was almost exactly equal to a day's work for somebody.
Appearing for the first time was the silver denarius.
Denarius.
Or denarii.
I knew it was a D something.
Yeah, a coin that would be the principal silver coin of Rome until the 3rd century.
And what they kept doing is dragging the silver content out of it. So they devalued it the same way we're doing our stuff. So all the mistakes that they made, and
we just keep repeating them.
Well, you know what else is they absolutely they could not, even Caesar couldn't stop the dole. So when you who was the guy, the restaurant guy here in Chicago talked about bread and circuses? That was a Roman term. You gave people the dole, they made bread, and they came to the gladiator fights. And who was the guy that, like the worst emperor ever? Was it Tiberius, who was the guy who was he killed everybody. But when he got in there, everybody hated the guy. But he did something like he had the gladiators. It was only usually on weekends. He was like,
I think it was Tiberius.
Whatever, he was 10, 12 straight days in a row of gladiator fights. Everybody loved him.
Yeah.
I mean, what we're doing now, we got NFL football and we have the doll, right?
Yep. Oh, and we have college football, which in a roundabout way is kind of funded by the government if you think about it.
Well, college football is essentially pro football, really.
Yeah.
And it starts this weekend.
It starts this weekend.
Yes, it does. I'm very excited.
Who's, does everybody play?
Everyone plays this weekend.
Yeah. Everybody plays this weekend.
So
my current school, Oklahoma State, kicks off against Oregon State late Friday night.
They're just Friday? What the Irish are playing who? The Little Sisters of the Poor or something?
The Irish play on Labor Day Monday, 8 p.m. at Louisville.
Louisville's not horrible.
Louisville has had been they're up and down. Last year they were down, but they always have NFL talent on that team.
Yeah, they're not horrible. Then they got to play Bowling Green.
Well, Virginia then they play they have a week off, and then they play New Mexico. Then they play at Georgia.
Oh my gosh,
that's the big one.
Mexico is Bob Davies' team. That should be interesting.
Yeah, at Georgia.
New Mexico's a doormat. They really, as far as college football goes, I think they're probably one of the teams that gets scheduled for people's homecoming more than anybody else.
Oh yeah, well it's they're not in the Pac-10, are they?
No.
No, they're like the WAC or the Mountain West, one of those two.
How would they even get on the schedule?
Because they're a cupcake. You got to play a couple. They're
a cupcake, and they're a Division I cupcake, so. You know, you'd rather do that than the Sisters of the Poor, as you put it.
But at least
Notre Dame doesn't play like one AA schools like the SEC does.
Right. That just drives me nuts. I'm amazed more people don't get hurt in those games.
Do we think that the 10,000 people are going to travel from New Mexico to South Bend?
10,000? No.
Oh no.
It'll be friends and family only.
All right.
Yeah.
Maybe 1,000. Maybe.
And we're
going to
give
2,000.
Them what? $400,000 or something?
You'll be paying them something,
yeah.
And Bob Davies, the coach,
it'll probably be the biggest paycheck they get for the season.
Yeah, still it's
Notre Dame,
including their home game.
Louisville, Mexico, New Mexico should win both of those. Then at Georgia, I would say you're definitely an underdog in that game.
Oh, God, yeah.
Then Virginia
I would
at
love
home.
Love to see them win that game.
Yeah, I would too. I hate Georgia. Virginia at home, you should win that. Bowling Green, that's a cupcake. Then it starts getting tough. You play USC, you play Michigan, which you're going to be an underdog in that game. It's at Michigan. You got Virginia Tech, who's always solid. And then it softens up a little bit. Duke, Navy, Boston College, and then you close out at Stanford, which is always a tough one.
Stanford, why do you my buddy Beldo claims that Stanford only had 58 people in scholarship. It's got to be the rest of them, but they obviously have enough people to practice. Will the other people just like walk on and walk out there and play or what?
Probably.
They're still ranked preseason number 25.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
it turns out you only need 11 to play.
I get that.
Actually, well, 22.
Plus a kicker.
Well,
or
you
two.
Can play both ways.
Plus a kicker, 23.
But I mean, the depth. I mean, yeah. If the season was 10 games long or 9, I'd roll with him, Eddie, but we're playing almost a pro season, for God's sake. 58 people is not.
Oh, yeah, you're playing a minimum of 12 games and more likely 13 or 14.
Well, how many people on everybody's roster? The Irish, we have 85, which is the max. Alabama's probably got 105, which is 20 over the max.
That's the SEC move, is over-recruit and then basically force guys to either transfer or redshirt based on performance.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you gray shirt them. You sent them to the junior college where they allegedly are paying for themselves and they can still practice with you, right?
I don't know the rules on that.
I don't know if you can do that.
Yeah, that doesn't sound right.
Well, they definitely can go to the junior college. I mean, whether they practice
right,
or not.
Oh, they can't practice with
you,
though.
They can put them on their minor league team.
Well, they're supposed to be paying for their own tuition. Now, what do you suppose the chances are of that?
Yeah, I'm sure. And they all sent them to the same school, so you know that they have some sort of connection there. But
one would think.
Yeah.
But it's not like they're still practicing with Alabama.
I'll ask my buddy Beldo on that. I'm not so sure you can't.
Hey, we're running out of time, and I got to do something.
What do you got to do? Tell us.
I told you last week. I was at a thing at Loyola where I had to check in, and when I checked in, the guy goes, "You're on Stocks and Jocks." His name was Dennis, and he listens to us on the recording.
Cool.
He says, "I always make sure I listen on Wednesdays because you're on." I don't know if that's true or not.
That's awesome.
But
I'm sure you like that part of the story the best.
I want to say hi to Dennis before I forgot. I wrote it on my hand and it started to fade because Sunday was shower day.
So that's Saturday night. It was Sunday. I like that.
Yeah, Sunday morning before church. It's shower day.
Oh God.
It says shout out to Dennis.
So when are you going on TV?
I got to remember.
When are you going to go on TV and explain all the new monetary theory to us?
If they would have me, I'd do it. I think I get so technical I confuse them the few times they've had me on.
You do not want to get
TV. You do not want to go very deep.
No,
I know. I start talking about VIX and the weekend effect and a bunch of other things and skew and. Like, all right, well, now we're going to go talk about, the economics behind raising dogs.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I just want you there for a second. Like Russell, thank you very much. See you next week, buddy. SP Futures down 4, NASDAQ Futures down 18, coming back from the leak-in we were doing earlier. So we're roughly halfway between even and 9 down. We're down 4. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.